Board, please. Now driving.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith of ESPN. Thursday at the Masters is an anxious time for the players as they enter tournament competition in hopes of producing an historic exit over the next 4 days that culminates in a new addition to the wardrobe. Despite the chaotic energy that can accompany golf's grandest stage, Billy Horschel invited me to ride to work with him Thursday morning. We started at the house he's renting here in Augusta, made our way to pick up his father at an adjacent residence where Billy's 4-year-old little boy Axel ran into Daddy's arms, before we ventured down Washington Road and then Magnolia Lane, en route to the Augusta National Clubhouse. My conversation with Billy was one of tremendous depth and insight on the evolution of a man and the mindset of an athlete chasing a place in history. Thursday morning at the Masters Tournament, and Billy Horschel and I are in the driveway getting ready to go to the course. What is going through your mind right now? You just exited the house and we got in the car.
Yeah, so I'm getting a little bit more comfortable. Obviously, I'm always nervous and anxious to get going. Not afraid to admit there's always doubt before any round of golf. I'd say there's more doubt probably early in the week of a tournament because you feel like you've done a lot of prep, but you just don't know how that prep's going to transition over to a tournament. But once you get in the car, you feel more comfortable. You get back in, you're right about to start a routine of working out, warming up, grabbing food, and sort of that doubt sort of wanders out. But really just excited to get going and see what this week has in store.
How does riding to a round at the Masters, certainly Thursday, compare to making your way to a typical tournament?
Yeah, it's probably a little more stressful for me. Not going to lie. I mean, I think it's just one of those things where the historic nature of this tournament, the aura of this place, you watch it on TV for so many years as a kid. Now to, you know, be a part of it for my 9th year. It's one of those things that I want to play so well and have those opportunities to win a Masters in my lifetime that, you know, you sort of, I mean, for me at least, I get myself too amped up and too excited and obviously it's affected me over the years, and I think, you know, hopefully my 9th year I finally figure out how to handle that a little bit better. And but like I said, it's exciting going to Augusta, doesn't matter when it is, but especially when it's during the Masters.
In what ways has that self-induced pressure impacted you?
Just trying too hard. When I put more pressure on myself, I'm a perfectionist at heart, so I try harder. And it's just human nature. And I've always known, and I know what I need to do. It's just I haven't done it. I just need to sort of take a step back and relax a little bit, and sort of let the golf happen, everything that I've worked, you know, for the last couple of weeks for, the years for, sort of take over and not try to, it's easy to say, get in my own way. And that's just, you know, overthinking stuff and trying too hard. So
now we're stopping by to pick up your dad, right?
Correct, yep. My dad. I always hand him the car off. He's over here stretching my little guy.
There is nothing that offers perspective.
Oh.
Like those little guys.
You're exactly right. I can get in my own shell a little bit.
Good morning.
Morning.
How you doing,
looking
brother?
Good in the suit.
Cheers. I'm way overdressed. I can tell you that much.
I can get in my own way a little bit. I can get in my own shell. I've always been very self-driven and worry about what I need to get done and be selfish a little bit. And you have to a little bit in this game. But since having kids, since being married, since my wife going through her recovery from alcohol, her addiction, you know, almost 6 years sober now, or 7 years actually in May, it's brought a new perspective to things. And sometimes when I'm not playing as well or things aren't going as well and I'm trying too hard, you know, just seeing my kids and seeing the life I've created is a great way to sort of just bring everything into perspective and understand things are going to work out the way they are. As much as I would love to be in control, and I'm very much a control freak, I've sort of got to just let go and you know, let the boat sail what it needs to sail.
How have you seen this guy grow up?
It's just a dream, you know. You know, I wanted to be a professional athlete. Things got in the way, and to see him, his dream come true from the time he was started swinging a club till now, it's just like, it's just unreal. It just, you know, it's hard to believe, put in words for me. You know, just love it.
It was so cool to see you guys yesterday. I was saying to Billy earlier, Mr. Horschel, that the opportunity to just be a family watching the Masters on the couch,
yeah,
is wonderful. But when you are in the arena together, it just must be an emotion I can't fathom. We're making our way here towards Washington Road and thereby Magnolia Lane. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about the first drive down Magnolia? First time you played in the Masters?
So the first time I ever came to Augusta, I actually was supposed to come with my dad and a close family friend of ours, one of my first pros that I worked with called Alex Romanoff, but weather was bad. So literally my first drive was the Saturday before the Masters. Came up and drove down, and like I said, I'm not one to get shell shock or emotional or anything like that, but it was like a cool moment. It was really cool, and you know, I couldn't comprehend what I was doing at that moment. And feeling, obviously, I look back at now, and I understand everything that I had accomplished to finally get there. But it's really tough for me to, I would say, live in the present, because and understand the moment and really, you know, cherish it and fully grasp it and fully take it in, because I'm always like, what's next? You know, so when I drove in here on Saturday in 2014, I was like, I'm ready, you know, I gotta get ready, prepared for the Masters. I gotta go out there, play my practice rounds. I gotta learn the course. So let's just say I didn't do a very good job of taking it all in that moment. But as I've come here more often.
I'll say, how about now?
Yeah, as I've come here more often, I've done a better job. And as I've gotten older of trying to, you know, really take everything in. And I've done a better job of that lately. And like I said, I'm truly lucky to be able to do this every year I've been able to.
When you're making your way to the Masters, I guess any tournament, but specifically this one, we have the radio off on purpose, but what is on the Billy Horschel pre-round playlist?
You know, I'll listen to anything and everything. Sort of been in my little country
good man
mode for a long time now. I love 90s and grunge music. I love Alt Nation. I love my classic rock, you know, from my parents and everything. You know, I still listen to hip hop and R&B, but right now it's country, and I'll warm up to sort of like some, you know, house music, BPM, stuff like that. Just love that little thing. And then lately, I guess it's because I watched the movie Elvis, I've been listening to two songs when I get done, and one of them is Suspicious Minds by Elvis.
Great song.
And the other one is, I'm drawing the blank. It's Elvis. It's the one he sang about when Malcolm X passed away.
So what is a typical morning routine for you as you're making your way to Augusta?
Yeah, so I do everything. I give myself as much time as I can, more than I would say the average pro. So
it's good that you did that today.
Yeah, always. I'll wake up. I mean, I wake up normally at home between 5 and 5:30. But you know, I'll wake up 4 hours for a tournament round, and then I usually get to the course around about 3 hours before, maybe three and change. I'll spend about 45 minutes in the gym warming up, doing a light little workout. From there, I'll go grab some breakfast for about 30 minutes. And then, like I said, I need to move slow, because I can move very quickly and get going very fast. So I give myself about 90 minutes in my warm-up between putting, chipping, hitting balls, and hitting some putts before I go tee off again. So it looks like some people are going down the left with the Masters.
I think you should maybe.
Or we'll go ahead.
Do the same thing.
We've got a special
vehicle. You're Billy Horschel. What are they going to do?
That helps a little bit, but it helps when you've got a courtesy car that has a Masters Player logo on it.
That's got a little more juice than the last name, yeah, huh?
Exactly. I heard earlier this week Zach was sitting in traffic, Zach Johnson, and he did the same thing. So
it's crazy, man.
It is. Like I said, I've never seen the traffic here. And I'm not sure. I'm guessing it's because Augusta's bought one of these, bought a lot of land over here, and now they're parking people over here a little more. Is my only guess, because usually I've never seen it this way. It'll get backed up like around right here a little bit, you know, just short of the entrance, but then it will open up from there.
I've heard from everybody from amateurs to Tiger Woods that when you're walking to the first on Thursday, it can be a very unique energy. How would you describe that energy?
So I think we all as players are nervous on the first tee of any tournament, but the most nervous I feel of any first tee shot or of any tee shot starting the round is here at Augusta.
Is that just due to the stage? What do you think is the reason?
Yeah, I think it's a staged, you know, just, you know, the fans are right there lining the tee box for 50, 60 yards. I mean, you're right about to play one of the most special places to play in this world. And I think it's just one of those things where you feel it and you learn how to embrace it. And like I said, I've been here for 9 years now, and I've done a fairly good job on that first tee. And you just embrace the moment, embrace the situation, understand everyone's feeling it.
So we're getting ready to take a left here. Where are we going?
So we're about to go down Magnolia Lane. It's very, you know, inconspicuous entrance because it's all covered by, you know, trees and everything else, and you just see one sign and the gate three, and you really, I mean, first time I came by, I almost missed it, to tell you the truth, because it's, you expect something grander, but when you turn down, this is where the grandness starts. Boys, how are we doing this morning?
Doing well, sir.
Thank you. And then you come down and you've seen these pictures and you've seen everything that you've watched on TV, and to be able to experience this and see the magnolias and see this unbelievable entrance, and you barely get a glimpse of the clubhouse right now, and it's pretty special. It truly is special.
I'm a little speechless, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's
a little bit speechless.
It's like I said, it's something that I'm like, my mind is thinking about around the golf and getting prepared, but you know, when I think back on this, you know, after this week or leading up to this event, and think about driving down this lane, driving down this drive, it's pretty special. It truly is special to be able to do this. And now here comes our security check.
Glad I remembered my credential.
We would have been in trouble.
We would have been in big trouble. How you doing, brother? I don't know if he was talking to me or you, but...
Hey guys,
how you doing?
How are we doing?
All right, all is well today?
Yes, sir.
All right, yes. Perfect.
Thank you.
Y'all have a wonderful
Thank
day.
You. You got one in the back there, too.
You gotta say, hey, don't forget about me.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Have a great evening.
Have a good one. Well, you know, I think the cool thing, too, is when you drive and you see all these, let me say this right, all these patrons lining up to take this picture that, you know,
iconic.
This may be the only time they ever come here, and you know, for anyone to experience it just once, you got to fully do every, you know, grasp it and take it in, and it's such a special thing. And it's amazing. It really is.
As someone who has the blessing of seeing a whole lot of big stages in my career, there's just nothing that I've ever experienced where every single morsel is first class. Everything. How do you describe what they do here at Augusta National?
They don't miss a beat. I was talking to one of the members yesterday about the course, and he was telling us some of the things they did, and they did everything in 3 months. There's not another place in this world that is able to do what they did in that amount of time. and make it look like it's been there for, you know, decades. And they, it's amazing that with all the changes they do and all, everything that has to encompass this tournament, they never miss a beat. They never, you know, it's never one of those things, oh man, we messed up on that. You know, we why didn't we think about that? You know, it's amazing. They just do an unbelievable job of thinking of every possible scenario, every possible problem, every possible way to enhance, you know, the experience for everyone involved. And they do an amazing job of it.
So we're pulling in the player lot now, right?
Yep.
At what point does it become normal that you have the opportunity to pull in here as a competitor, park your car, and go to work?
Yeah,
is there still just a little pinch me, or it's now it's just okay? I'm here, I've been here, I belong here. Let's go do the job.
Yeah, I think it's I think once you get past security and once you take that, you know, right turn and come in here, it's like, hey, this is game time. You know, this is time to get prepared. This is time to get focused. Time to, you know, do all the preparation you need to get ready to hopefully play a great round of golf and enjoy playing a great golf course.
Well, I can't tell you what a joy for me this was. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marty.
I love your spirit.
Thanks, buddy.
I love your perspective.
Thanks, buddy.
So grateful, and go kill him, man.
Will do.
It's difficult for me to truly articulate how grateful I am that Billy took the time and certainly his willingness to be so vulnerable and share his life with us amid such an important moment here at the Masters. He shot one over on Thursday, 8 shots behind the leaders. John Rahm, Victor Hovland, and Brooks Koepka left Augusta National Thursday tied for the lead at 7 under par, and they took very different paths to get there. Hovland started hot and stayed that way.
It was very fun today. Got off to a nice start, obviously making eagle on number 2 and just kept hitting great shots on the front nine and made some putts. And before I knew it, somehow I was 6 under through 11. Just kind of coast in to a 65. So that was awesome. Obviously, we don't know how bad it's going to get, but I tend to think that it's easier to make up some ground on the easier days. So if you start with a really low round and it gets very difficult, it's kind of easier to protect the score a little bit compared to if you're 5, 6, 7 shots back. It's really difficult to make up that much ground if this place is playing very difficult. So obviously getting off to a nice start is key this week. Don't need to get fully nerdy about it, but basically I've the biggest part is that I'm not tilting back as much. And the biggest problem was that I've gotten too shallow with my chips, and that's when you just kind of have to yank the hands forward and you get no loft. So the first part was just kind of getting more on top of the ball, get some more angle of attack down, and now I can actually present the loft in the way that I want to. If I want to hit it high, if I want to hit it low, I can do that with my wrist now. The few weeks that I've had at home, the last 2 months, I'd say it's been really cold, and I've played with 3-4 layers and 30 degree weather and blowing 30. So it's been I've definitely had enough practice in those types of conditions, but I haven't played Augusta National in that type of weather, so that will be interesting to see how that goes. But I don't think that will be a disadvantage.
That 65 for Hovland was his lowest round ever in a major tournament. During his round, he also experienced the spectacle that is Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I think it just happened to be the case. But obviously, it's really cool to just be around him. He's been such a huge influence to the game of golf, and obviously watched him hours growing up, and to get to play with him for the first time today was very special, and especially to play this time this round as well.
As for Rahm, his start was inauspicious. He four-putted on 1 to card a double bogey 6, but was lights out the rest of the day.
You know, a couple different things. If you're going to make a double or four-putt or anything, might as well be the first hole. Right? I got 71 holes to make it up. I was focused on the fact that all the strokes were good. The reads were good. The roll was good. Obviously, the speed was off on the first two putts. Once I kind of accepted that there was nothing really to look into, I just got to work. I had 17 holes to make up. And I've always told Adam, and I tell a lot of people that ask me about the Masters, if you can somehow make it through the first 6.5 holes, and what I mean is putting the ball in the fairway on 7, and you're around even par, I think it's a pretty good start. It's easy to make bogeys. It's not easy to make birdies. So if you can get through that, you have a short iron into 7, 8, 9 to maybe make some birdies and get the round going. And I was able to do that and took advantage of it the rest of the day. I don't know, finally, it's the first time this year that it's felt like it should in the past. My swing off the tee, definitely. There's 2 3 woods, one on the first hole and one on 10, both well hit. Every other tee shot, it's something I mentioned after the round to Adam as well. It was about as good as I could think so. Line-wise, especially, all of them were on line. Every trajectory was the way I thought of. So being the strength of my game, I wouldn't say there was any key. I just really committed to my lines and to my swing and was able to pull it off. This is hard to say what's going to happen, right? Every time we've had bad weather here, when it's as warm as it is, it's usually a thunderstorm, so we're not really playing. But when it comes and goes through, it softens up the golf course and it gets a little bit more scoreable, right? So it's hard to say when it's going to be the easiest day. Luckily, I don't think the wind blew as hard as it was supposed to today. And starting on 13 on, I mean, we barely had any wind and was able to take advantage of that. So, yeah, I mean, if there's ever, like I just said, if there's ever a good time to shoot a low score, obviously Sunday would be the best if you're somewhere close. But knowing that, you know, we don't know how the week is going to unfold, I'm definitely happy. So the eagle on 8, it was about as hard a drive as I can hit. I mean, I hit that perfect on the center, high cut. And then it was 210 meters, slope adjusted already, to the front of the green. And I believe it was 244 to the pin. So knowing that you can't carry it at the pin, my goal was to hit a draw 4 iron and hopefully cover 5 to 10 on and get the right bounce and get towards the back of the green, right? I hit it a little bit lower than I wanted, and he carried about 8 on, and obviously in a perfect line and released all the way to 3 feet, right? I would hope it get that close, but being realistic, it doesn't usually happen that often, and I'm happy it did. I mean, it was a really good swing, and for that to end up that close is a huge bonus.
And Koepka, the four-time major champion, now healthy for the first time in ages, certainly appears to be back in championship form.
Honestly, I think it was just the start. Got off to a good start. Anytime you're 200 through three, that's a good start. So felt good. Kind of just piggybacked off that momentum, and very happy the way I played. Drove the ball really nicely. Left it in some good spots. Even missed quite a few putts. I think I missed a short one on 6, 8, 9, 10. So they were all kind of inside 10 feet. But could have been really low, but I'll take it. 7's pretty good. It's all injury-based. I don't think if any athlete, anybody that's going through something where you can't, I mean, you can't even bend your knee. I mean, I'll spare everybody the details of what had actually happened. It's pretty gruesome, right? They told me getting out of surgery that it was going to be pretty much a year and a half anyways, and then you create bad habits and it's just frustration. You just feel like you're never going to be healthy. You know, I wish I had celebrated kind of the little milestones along the way instead of thinking I could just power through it. I mean, 3 weeks after I was here, and they didn't even think that was possible. So, it was definitely frustrating, but once you feel good, everything changes.
During Koepka's round on the 15th, questions arose as to whether or not he advised fellow competitor Gary Woodland. Augusta National released a statement saying he did not. Here's Koepka's explanation.
Yeah, we looked at it when we got back in. G-Dub and Butchie had no idea what we were hitting. They didn't even know. So, because I know that for a fact, because G-Dub asked me what we hit walking off. We were walking down. So, that's all I can give you.
The biggest draw at the 87th Masters, as is seemingly always the case when he's in the field, is Tiger Woods. Woods, the 5-time champion here at Augusta, finished Thursday with a 2-over par 74. His rebuilt right leg was admittedly very sore.
I didn't have very good speed early. Had two three putts and consequently in a couple over par, but I didn't hit my irons close enough today. You know, I didn't give myself very good looks. Need to do a better job of that going forward. Hopefully get myself back in this tournament. Well, I feel like I drove it good. I just didn't do the job I needed to do to get the ball close. Today was the opportune time to get the ball, get the round under par, and I didn't do that today. Most of the guys are going low today. This was the day to do it. Hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better, a little bit sharper, and kind of inch my way through it. I mean, this is going to be an interesting finish to the tournament with the weather coming in. If I can just kind of hang in there, maybe kind of inch my way back, hopefully it'll be, you know, positive towards the end.
The only other player in history to earn more green jackets than Tiger Woods 5 is, of course, Jack Nicklaus, who earned 6 green jackets. On Thursday morning, Nicklaus joined Gary Player and Tom Watson in the ceremonial first tee.
Being at this wonderful tournament is gratitude to have the opportunity to play in a tournament of this stature. And to meet people like President Eisenhower, and then meeting Bobby Jones here as well. Such a wonderful golfer, gentleman. Maybe the best player that ever lived. He played with a walking stick and a ball that went 80 yards less than today. No mowers. So I think the word is gratitude, just to be able to, particularly for me, this is my 65th appearance here. And you walk on the first tee and you say, well, this might be the last one. So I think gratitude is a word for me.
I first played here, I missed the cut the first year with 8 three-putt greens, and I was at 149. Arnold was at 141, and I hit 31 greens in regulation, and he hit 19. And I said, I think I better learn how to putt. So I learned how to putt these greens, and it worked. Outside of that, that's a pretty good life lesson to learn how to putt, because if I didn't learn how to putt, I wouldn't be sitting here. And but it's you know, to be here and be part of what's going on is pretty special. And we've just been very blessed to be part of it.
I concur with what Gary said. Gratitude. I say it a bunch of times, not very lightly. I say, how lucky am I to be able to play a game for a living? I mean, I wake up and I can't wait to go out to my job. It's a game. Sometimes it got a little frustrating in years, but be able to tee it up at Augusta as an amateur in 1970, and then again in 1975, playing with Jack in the second to the last group when he made that. How long was that putt at 16?
42 feet, 3 inches.
I don't know. Yeah, approximately, right?
Approximately.
But to be able to play with and try to compete with my heroes, I had a chance to play with Arnold Palmer when I was 15 years old, again with Jack as an amateur when I was 17 years old, and then got paired with him in my first Masters in 1975. The dream was there, but just the ability to play a game for a living. You know, you all work for a living, right? I play a game for a living. It can't be any better than that.
Pretty good, isn't it?
I'm just curious, when they move 13 back, are they now hitting what you might have hit in your heyday into that, or is it still different even with the 35 extra yards?
I'd say it's about, I went back on the tee a couple of weeks ago and looked at it, and, I think he could probably still carry a few trees on the right side. I don't think he probably could carry all the trees. You could always do that from the tee up. If you turn it around the corner, you could get it into where you might be able to play a 5-iron to the green. I said, and Fred said he played with Scotty the other day, and he did a 5-iron into the green.
Kitayama hit a 7-iron.
Did he hit a 7-iron? Well, you could do that. Kitayama did.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think Augusta more than any place else has probably adjusted their golf course to keep the conditions similar to what we played. Now, we played pretty much the same clubs they're playing in today from a different tee. That's what you're really asking. And 13 was the last one that they did.
This is for all three of you. What is the biggest change that you have seen at Augusta National from when you first walked onto the property to today?
Well, very simple. It's the greens. When I played here as an amateur in 1970, they were overseeded over Bermuda. So rye overseeded Bermuda. 1981, they changed it to bent grass. Frankly, that was the biggest change. They finally got it right. They had a few issues with the bent grass greens, with the slopes of the greens the first year, and they rectified that.
Yeah.
But it was, to me, that was the biggest change.
I think the fairways, I remember going in a playoff with Arnold Palmer in 1962, and we came to 13, and he outdrove me by 10 yards, and I looked at my ball and I said, I have a lie that I cannot go for the green. And I remember hitting my ball when I won the tournament in 61 in the trees on the right, and I couldn't have a clear shot because I couldn't move the people, and I chipped it back on the fairway and went down into the creek. The lies at number two, the little short shots into that green, the fairways, I mean, it's just like night and day, and technology's made a massive difference to the game, the condition of the golf course. And Tom's great mentor, Byron Nelson, said one of the biggest changes is the mower. And that's so true. The conditions of the course today, I mean, we had a man called Bobby Locke, who in America they never regard in the top 50 top players. He's definitely in the top 15 players that ever lived. If you put him on greens like this, you would have seen putting like you've never seen by any human being. I mean, he putted on Bermuda greens and never putted on a bent green like this in his life. I mean, the greens today are like a snooker table. And for people to make comparisons of golfers, it's impossible. You can't compare different eras. It's a completely different game today than what we played. Completely different. From prize money to conditions of the golf course to modes of travel, it's a completely different game.
This tournament has so many wonderful traditions, one of them being the Tuesday night champions dinner. I was wondering, maybe starting with Tom, if you could go down and share a favorite champions dinner story.
Well, I think one of my favorite stories is last year at the dinner. The MC, Ben Crenshaw, he asked, anybody have any comments? And it was kind of silence. And so I started a story about Doug Ford and how he won the tournament. A year before that, before Doug passed away, he was over in the corner in the champions locker room. I went over there to sit by him, and I said, how are you feeling? He said, not worth a like this, you know, how Doug was. But and I said, well, I want to know something. Tell me about how you won your Masters tournament. And he proceeded to describe how he buried it in the left bunker, how he couldn't play to the flag. He had a two-shot lead, and he played up the slope. Said, I had to hit it up the slope. I said, well, how'd you do? He said, I hold it. He made three and won by three. And then Ben asked for another, any more comments, and still kind of silence. And so I piped up, as sometimes I'm wont to do. And I said, Jack, tell us about the last nine holes in 1986. And he did. And you could have heard a pin drop. Everybody was kind of, all the champions are there listening to shot by shot and Jack playing. Playing there, because we all have been in that position before. We all won the tournament. We all knew the pressure. We all knew the shots he had to play. And here he is talking about shot by shot in the last nine holes. That was my favorite part of any of the Masters dinners.
And then Gary finished that same dinner off with Hideki, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And made a speech in Japanese to him.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty darn special.
And Hideki made the speech in English.
Yeah, that's right.
And that was very special. Hideki is sitting up there like this, with his eyes wide open, trying to remember and reciting English like this the whole time. And he made a beautiful speech. Then after it was over, he bent his head down there and went, like that. And we all clapped. You know, we actually stood up and just, you know, he gave him a standing O. It was really special.
I'll tell you, I thought this year's dinner was pretty special.
It was.
Yeah. You know, everybody was wondering whether there was going to be any problems with the LIV players and things. Zero. was the most cordial evening you could have ever spent. Mm-hmm. It was terrific.
My greatest experience was with Bobby Jones. He was riddled with arthritis, and I mean, it was like that. And he asked me to put the fork between his fingers like that, and would I cut his meat? And he was withered and bent over, and I cut his meat, and the only way he could eat it was to jab the fork in the steak and eat it. And I said, I took the opportunity, I said, Mr. Jones, may I ask you a question, sir? He says, by all means. Now, you know the third hole, that little neck on the left. I mean, if you put the ball on that green there, you've hit a shot of your lifetime. Because you can just, if you're short, you roll way back the hill, and if you're too long, now you've got an extremely difficult shot. And I said, Mr. Jones, you know, I can never birdie the third hole. And he just said, you're not supposed to birdie the third hole. That explained it.
Following the first round, I had the opportunity to sit down with my new friend, Iona Steven, a golf commentator who spent her Thursday reporting on the 15th and 16th holes, and she offered her perspective on the first round. It is wonderful to spend a few minutes with my new friend, Iona Steven, who just exited the course here at Augusta National after 7 hours on air broadcasting the opening round of the 87th Masters at the 15th and 16th holes. You always do such a great job. I would love first, Iona, to get your perspective on the leaders. Victor Hovland, Brooks Koepka, and John Rahm exit on Thursday at 7-under. What did you see from each of them today?
Well, where shall I start, Marty?
I think you should start, first of all, what were the conditions
that
they were playing under at 15 and 16?
Yeah.
And what did you see from how they attacked those holes?
Well, you know, the conditions were fairly benign overall out there. I mean, from what the weather reports were giving us earlier on last night and yesterday, we were all a bit worried about what was coming in and were we going to make it through the day. So given that, you know, it was a very, very much a scoring kind of opportunity that we have and we get to sit and watch at 15 and 16. Traditionally, they play as two of the easier holes. You know, they rank around the fourth and fifth in terms of hole difficulty. And certainly today, 15 was presenting a real opportunity and 16, not so much. 15, as you know, it's a wonderful par five. You've got to hit your drive down that right-hand channel. There's a bank over there that will kick everything down to the left. And really, from there, you've got a decision. Are you going to take it on in two? Or are you going to play it as a three-shotter? And if you are, then you need to lay up down the left-hand side of that 15th hole, particularly with the hole location over where it was today, tucked on the right-hand side, quite tight, only 7 paces on from the front of the green. So if you were going to take it on in three, as many of the players did, then you needed to get yourself down there and leave yourself a flick on. As we saw with the leaders and certainly a lot of these big hitters and these younger players, they were going in with irons for their second shot. So the thing is, though, it's a tough green to hit and hold if you're coming in from, you know, 230-235 yards. So many of them hitting it long. Scottie Scheffler actually was a shot of the day, I'd say one of the shots of the day that stood out for me. He hit three iron, tried to hit a little cutty three iron for his second shot, complete miscue. He flew the green, landed it on the back bank. We're all thinking Hideki Matsuyama, you know, that's headed for the water. Thankfully, it came up short of the water and he had this horrible pitch shot, really awkward. And he played a magical, magical little pitch shot up to a couple of feet and tapped in for birdie. So, you know, he was going in there with a three iron. A lot of the guys were going in with a four iron. Brooks Koepka hit an absolute monster of a drive. And he looked really strong coming down there. He two-putted for birdie. We saw a couple of eagles, not many of them, though. But I think overall, that hole today collectively for the field played around 37 under par. So that gives you an idea of what an opportunity it was. Yeah, there were a few players that were walking off there disappointed with a par. You really feel like you've left one out there, or maybe a couple. To 16, however, a different story altogether. Penn also on the front portion of the green, the whole location down on that bottom tier. As you know, it's a two-tier green, everything feeds down. And we saw a lot of players hitting it up to that bank and either getting caught up there on the right-hand side, and then basically it's a three-putt territory. You're desperately trying to get out of there with the par and run to the 17th tee. Players who were long of the whole location were also finding that putt really tricky to get back down the slope. Players who took dead aim, and actually I stepped out the box, sadly. It was my lunch break when Tiger Woods came in, but he was the first player all day.
Gotta eat, girl.
Gotta eat, yeah, you do have to eat. Who took it left of the flag and played a little cut. And that really was the most successful. Tyrrell Hatton hit the same shot, but there weren't many players that set up for the fade. Phil Mickelson was the only player to hit it in the water, and he nearly holed out with his second shot off the tee for a par, but he tapped in for a bogey in the end. So there was a lot of drama, which is what you always see in holes 15 and 16. They're two key protagonists in the narrative of any Masters, and today was no exception.
There was an interesting moment on 15 that we've learned about, that mm-hmm. there was some consideration that maybe Brooks Koepka assisted or advised Gary Woodland on his shot.
Is that what happened? Yeah.
That's what we're learning, yes.
Well, Ned Michaels, my colleague, co-commentator, and I stepped out the box, and we had a couple of messages on our phone saying what happened on 15. And with Brooks Koepka, we said, well, he hit a drive so far that both of us nearly lost our eardrums because it had a different sound to it altogether. It went whew, off the face. So that's the first thing I remember. And then I remember him just crunching an iron to the middle of the green. We weren't aware of obviously we're cutting between the 15 and 16. So perhaps they had a wee blether when we weren't watching. But no, I'm not aware of what happened. But tell me more, Marty.
Augusta National has announced that there was no infraction.
Well, there you go.
So it was, I just wondered if you happened to see it.
No, we didn't.
You had any perspective on it.
Obviously, we're trying to cover, you know, two holes. Sadly, we don't follow their every move down these holes. So we're cutting back between the 16 and 15. So perhaps if they were having a conversation, Gary Woodland, we weren't on them at the time. But certainly the way Brooks Koepka executed that hole was pretty textbook.
You being an expert, I would love your perspective on what John Rahm did today. You start with a four putt on one.
Yeah.
Okay. Cards a six on one, finishes the round a seven under. What is the mental fortitude that a man has to have in order to flush that and rally to post such a great number?
Well, the mental fortitude is everything that John Rahm possesses. You know, he's so young. He's got such a wise head on his young shoulders, and he is a man that will never give up. And I guess that's part of the Spanish blood, right? You know, he's got role models like Olazabal, Severiano Ballesteros, these great players who always taught never give up. And John Rahm is, you know, a lot of people have given him stick in the past, and I've spoken to John about this, about being a bit hot under the collar out there on the golf course. And really, it's just passion. You know, he's tough on himself, but he won't go in a huff. You know, there's a difference between getting frustrated and throwing the toys out the pram, right? And packing it in. John Rahm will get frustrated because it means so much, and he will never, ever give up. And to be honest, they say it's better to start your round poorly because you've got the rest of it to make it up. There's nothing more frustrating than finishing the day with a double bogey or finishing with a bogey. I mean, that leaves a really sour taste in the mouth because there's nothing you can do about it until the next day. The thing about making a mistake at the start is, okay, right, you know, and John Rahm's had a little bit of dip in form. So, you know, he's never coming in under the radar. He's John Rahm. But, you know, that he hasn't had all the attention in the way that he had a couple of months ago in the PGA Tour. And, well, you know, it's the Masters. Everyone feels the nerves. Doesn't matter how many times you've won on the PGA Tour, you will go out there and sometimes take a hole or two to settle in. But John Rahm is someone that we can all learn something from when it comes to golf and what it takes to have mental focus and determination, because when he gets the bit between the teeth, there is no stopping him, and he will never, ever give up. And I think that's the message with John Rahm.
I was also impressed with Jordan Spieth's mental fortitude today because he hit the water a few times. I know that you were on 15 and 16 and may not have seen any of that, but he did have a couple of errant shots and managed to rally and post a really nice number. Really appreciate your insight. I know it's been a very long day. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
It's a pleasure. And it's, you know, I must say it's an absolute joy to be in there as a commentator covering the Masters. And with Ned Michaels, the pair of us are looking at each other going, this is a good day in the office. So we're looking forward to seeing the next few days unfold and plenty more drama to come at the 15th and 16th holes.
So overall, as you leave the course today here at Augusta, what will be your takeaway from Thursday?
Well, it's been a very special day watching 15 and 16, but this morning I was down in the practice area and I had the pleasure of a few moments with Sandy Lyle. And of course, Sandy was the 1988 Masters champion, and he announced just over a month ago that he's going to be stepping away from competitive golf, both on the seniors tour and this sadly will be his last Masters. And as a Scotswoman myself, this was a very proud moment. Everyone remembers Sandy Lyle taking the green jacket home with him in 88. And the way he did it was up the 18th, find the fairway bunker down the left-hand side, a magical 7-iron that he hit up to about 10 feet. And he holed the putt for birdie to beat Mark Calcavecchia by one shot. And really, Sandy Lyle is, you know, everything that we hope to be in golf. He's humble. He's very modest. He's a gentle giant and a real gentleman. And when I spoke to him this morning, you know, he spoke about his relationship with Augusta National and what the Masters has meant to him in his life, and being able to say that he has won here and he will forever remain a Masters champion. You could see the emotion in his eyes and hear it in his voice, just the impact that's had on his life. And to be able to have that conversation with him, a great of the game, a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, was a real privilege for me today.
It's the pinnacle of sport.
It certainly is.
I love that story that Iona shared about Sandy Lyle and her respect and appreciation for his influence. Now, my friends, we make our way to Friday at the Masters. The forecast shows there is potential for inclement weather. As a result, Augusta National announced tee times will be moved up 30 minutes. Now, the first tee time is at 7:30, and gates will open at 7 a.m. The top 50 players, plus ties, will play on the weekend at the 87th Masters. And we cannot wait. Thank you so much for listening to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith. We'll see y'all Friday.